Hey, it's Chaz and AJ in the morning.
Hey, what's going on?
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Here are some of the best parts from today's show.
Listen to it, please. Thank you.
And please subscribe, share, like, comment, all that stuff.
All of it, please.
Thank you. It happened at this band's concert.
Really?
The oddest thing I've ever heard flying through the air at a concert. Nice. A pig head.
A pig head.
A severed pig's head flying through the air.
Most times it's a beach ball or something like that.
A beach ball.
Yeah, frisbees sometimes.
Frisbees. Right.
A pig's head.
I guess a pig's head.
Right. How do you bring a pig's head in? Like, what are you carrying?
How did it get in is a great question.
Don't they pat you down when you're walking into a concert?
Apparently, there's a whole category for this music. It's called black metal. They're called martyrdom.
That's called
marriage. They have apologized after a severed pig's head was tossed around at their recent show.
Why are they apologizing? They didn't do it.
The incident happened Friday night at the White Swan in Houston, Texas, where the bands Devoured, Trachea, and Accosted were headlining. Video footage shared on social media shows the head being thrown toward the back of the audience, with at least one concert goer exclaiming, "Gross!"
No, they were, "Gross!"
That person was brought as a guest with someone else who knew what was going on.
I can't believe it!
After seeing backlash for the stunt from those in the vegan community and other individuals who were simply grossed out, Martyrdom issued the following statement. "We just want to start off by saying we are incredibly sorry to anyone who was offended with our actions and gimmicks on stage." Oh, well, this sounds like they brought the head and threw it out.
Oh.
"We are a black metal band, and as part of it, we try to add a little bit of imagery and shock value to our set. Unfortunately, our acts has gotten carried away and way out of hand, offending many and even harming some."
Dress some marshmallow peeps next time.
It's a hard thing. You know, it's like, "We're sorry."
Have some gardeners.
It's like this big bad monster. "I'm sorry we scared you. We're going to be better people. Sorry for all the darkness in our hearts and the evil stuff. And flying pig heads. I know. We're going to be better people. We want to apologize to any vegans, Muslims, or other minority groups that may have been offended, and to anyone who was harmed by our act."
Well,
yeah, that's how you do it.
"Truly sorry." Yeah. So weird.
Never do it again.
The viral video was posted on X on Twitter, and someone commented, I guess, who was at the show, and it just says, "It's real and it stinks."
Well, yeah, it's dead.
I love that the band is like this really dark, crazy, dark black metal group.
Yeah.
And they're like, "We're sorry."
Yeah, they're really heartfelt.
I mean, just start with, "Hi, everyone."
"Hi, guys." "Hope you enjoyed the show Friday."
If they would have said, like, "Disciples."
"We're very, very sorry if you were offended.
I want to apologize to Trachea as well."
Yeah.
It's like, don't you double down? Like, you're trying to trying to be
just kind of
badass.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, wait until the next show.
Right.
It's going to be all human heads.
All the innards. And the rest of the pig still.
So
come out on Saturday. It's cadaver night.
Right. By Sunday, get hit by the pig's butthole. Well, what we see is the whole pig.
I hope that curly thing I was hit with was its tail.
Yeah, well, I think it kissed me. It got stuck. Hang on.
I was at an AC/DC show in Hartford, and my friend was hit in the back with a lug nut.
Ouch.
At least it didn't stink.
No, it stung.
I thought, like, who the hell brings lug nuts to a concert?
Yeah, how does that make the checklist?
I'm guessing it was a mechanic in the
pocket.
All right,
wait a minute. Wallet, keys.
Hey, something to throw.
I'm forgetting something.
Something to throw.
My lunchbox of lug nuts.
Lug nuts! Right.
Listen, I'm going to need that back for my ride home. Yeah, I probably dipped so through all five.
Jennifer in Middlefield.
I was at the Rolling Stones in Boston, and I was hit in the back of the head by a blow-up sex doll.
Oh.
And
that was supposed to go to Mick. That was Mick's present, not yours.
The funniest thing was it was being thrown around like a paper airplane.
Yeah, hoping at you first.
Instead of a...
Yeah, right?
I've seen videos of stuff like this.
Oh.
Like, instead of the...
Yeah.
Here's the thing, though. You got to sneak it in.
Yeah.
And then you got to blow it up.
Yeah, that one friend. That one from the lung power. I hope you wash the back. I hope you wash the back of your head first, right?
Sometimes put the nozzle in a very interesting place.
Yes.
And there you are at a concert.
Right? Nobody noticed that.
That's how you get into the concert.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, flew in on it.
Oh, that's
great. Yeah, it was really funny because it was flying around. It just looked like a paper airplane, only it was this bizarre looking.
It had that shotgun in his face. That Mr. Bill Oh No face.
Right, they always look surprised. Their mouth's open.
Yeah.
Ooh, no!
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Exactly. But it went on for a while. It was pretty funny.
Jennifer, thank you for calling.
Put your beer.
Thank you.
Jay on the road.
So back in 94, I saw Weezer at the Sting in New Britain, and I got hit in the chest by a jar of peanut butter. I guess on Weezer's website, like their fan page, they told people to bring peanut butter and cereal to the show, so I guess the guys didn't have to buy food on the road.
Right.
So there were like boxes of Count Chocula flying around.
Nice.
It was nuts. It was a lot of fun.
On their website, they said bring peanut butter and cereal.
To feed the band.
It was like their webpage back in the early 90s. They told their fan page told people, bring cereal and peanut butter.
That's great.
I saw them at Joe's Place after that on the Pinkerton tour, and they were still bringing in food for the band, but Joe's Place gave them cases of beer, and they got pizza next door. So I guess they were all set with that.
When you hit with the peanut butter, you got to watch out because jelly's coming next.
I threw it back and wound up bouncing it off a bouncer's head.
Oh.
So.
1994, that's before they put that protective, like, piece of paper or whatever it is when you open the lid of peanut butter and when it's new.
The second layer,
I don't know if I'm Weezer, if I'm going to trust peanut butter that's brought in by...
Well, you look for no dent.
Right.
Yeah.
There's no scoop marks in it. You're all set.
Yeah. All right, Jay, thank you. Nick and Orange.
I was a designated driver, so I had a bunch of my buddies in the car. I wasn't drinking or anything, but I ended up, because I had to drive, I was smoking a little bit of the hashish, and that sort of played into it, too.
I love designated driver, so I won't drink.
No.
I'll get stoned.
Right.
Like a gentleman.
I could drive it for hours.
Yeah.
Like a responsible adult.
Right. I'm an excellent driver.
I'm smoking hash.
Yeah, you know how Xfinity is in Hartford. You know, you do one in the park, one beer in the parking lot, and you got to drive home, so that's it.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a John Mayer show, which is, you know, you don't usually expect to get hit in the head at one.
No.
Not at all, no.
Yeah,
unless it's like a bra.
I don't really know what happened. You know, none of my friends saw it, but just I got hit with like one of those full. They got those big like 24-ounce beers.
Oh.
Someone just hucked it into the crowd, and it hit me right in the temple. And I thought I was going to die on the lawn up there.
That's a lot of money.
This is how it's going to end. Still don't have she would.
That's a $17 throw at least.
Right.
It's a big beer. It's a lot of weight.
Right, and it was not light. It was not light beer.
And
at
your
all.
Friends probably ran to get the beer before it all spilt before they checked in on you.
Seriously,
yeah, no,
never
they
mind him.
Didn't care.
It's like, hey, where's Nick? Has anyone seen Nick?
Check the floor.
Last time I saw him, he had a beer bounce off his head.
You're standing on him.
No, because that was the thing, because I decided to get a little stoned before, so I thought I was, like, I was having, like, hallucinations out there, because I have a concussion going now.
This is good hash. Well, I can really feel a bump in my face
the
and everything.
The best John Mayer show ever. Have you been following the Trakonis trial?
Dribs and drabs, yeah.
Dribs and drabs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not your thing.
Right.
I'm always interested in court cases. You know, one of the number one shows on television. It's always court dramas and police shows, and this is really a whodunit, a horrible story that happened here in our state. It's turned into a national and international story. Lisa Wexler, probate judge out of Westport, hosts a show on WICC from 10 a.m. to noon every day on the show. Now, she's been following it. What's happened since the last time we talked?
Well, some of the most gruesome evidence that I think we'll see in the whole trial was introduced on Tuesday. And what's fascinating to me, and I can't keep emphasizing this enough, is that this is new. In other words, it's new to the people who have been following the case for 4 years. The police have done an unbelievable job in keeping everything under wraps until trial. So what they introduced, so the story is that the police believe that immediately after Jennifer Doulos was killed, Fotis Doulos and Michelle Traconis got into a car and started to dispose of the evidence. And the evidence was a bunch of garbage bags, and the evidence was a, what do you call that, from a car, the front mat of a car, in this case, the back mat of a car mat, and the evidence was some license plates. And they have on video on Albany Avenue in Hartford, the two of them in the front seat of the car. Periodically, he gets out and he dumps garbage bags in various receptacles. The police went after those receptacles. They found them, and they uncovered very bloody garments. They uncovered a bra with blood all over it that was sliced in half. They uncovered a razor blade. They uncovered all kinds of other things that appear to have had blood on them, blood-stained garments. Now, they haven't specifically and officially tied the DNA of that blood to Jennifer Doulos yet, but the presumption is they were her garments. One was a Vineyard Vines shirt that she was known to have worn, and the presumption is that it's obviously her blood. So that was pretty awful. It was awful for the family.
Seeing that bra knocked the wind out of me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, because you know she's dead.
Yeah.
You know, because you see all these pictures of her smiling and all this stuff, and you know she's missing. You see that bra, you're like, that's a, not only is she dead, but it was a gruesome, brutal, horrific death.
Horrific. Exactly.
I don't know how any juror, and just based on a little bit I'm seeing that the little bit that I'm seeing from reports.
Uh-huh.
And hearing from you, I don't know how any juror can come to the conclusion that there's not enough evidence to say she knew something.
Yeah, there's reasonable doubt here, yeah.
Well, so let me interject that, because it's very interesting how John Schoenhorn, her attorney, is playing this. And he's playing this to the press, not within earshot of the jury. Yesterday, on the court steps, or maybe it was Tuesday afternoon, he went out and gave an alternate theory, which was published in the Connecticut press. And the alternate theory was that Michelle Traconis got in the front seat of this car, was very busy texting and talking to her own family and relatives, thought that she was going to Starbucks, that he said we were going to Starbucks. She realized they made a half a mile or a mile detour before they got to Starbucks, and that she wasn't paying attention at all, that she was so immersed in her life of texting and calling that she didn't stop to say, why are we stopping every 15 seconds for you to throw that out, and what is in that garbage?
Not believable.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see. We'll see what the jury says.
Not believable.
It's very interesting to me that the argument is being made to the press, and he hasn't made it to the jury, which means he's a very shrewd guy, in my opinion. It means that he anticipates that somehow the jurors who are not sequestered will maybe get hold of this. We'll see. We'll see. See what happens. But, you know, the other piece of it is the car mat we know was removed and placed against the side of some kind of storefront or sidewalk. That was never recovered by police. So that was another piece of evidence, but that was the one piece not recovered. But the license plates were recovered from the sewer grate. The police went down, they went into the sewer, and they found the license plates that belonged to a former car of Fotis Doulos. Now, why would you dispose of sewer plates in a grate? Just let's imagine. Is there any possible license good plates. Reason right. why you might want to do that?
No.
Yeah.
No.
No, it's pretty obvious why he killed himself. Because he knew all of this evidence was coming, and he was probably trying to make a deal, and his attorney probably said, this is the best you're going to get, and he was like, screw it, because I'm not going to spend the rest of my life in jail.
It's going to, bail now.
Yeah.
And we don't know whether or not Michelle Traconis was ever offered a deal. It may very well be that the prosecutor wanted this evidence to come to light in a way, in tribute to Jennifer Doulos so that the world can see how she was killed. Because remember, if you have a plea and somebody goes to jail, we in the public, we never know the details of these cases. And the investigators worked this case so hard. It's unbelievable how much work they did.
Judge Lisa Wexler on the phone. We're talking about the Traconis case.
Yeah.
I can't imagine her not being offered a deal for information leading to the answer to the question.
Yeah.
Where is she?
Yeah. Yeah, you might be right. I mean, we don't know. This is one of the things that we don't know. And certainly if she was, it wasn't a good enough deal because her attorney has risked trial and here she is on trial and now we're seeing all the evidence. But remember, she is entitled to the presumption of innocence. She has always maintained her innocence. She has. And she and her lawyer have an alternate theory of her presence in the car.
Man, I just don't know how any juror buys that one.
Seriously.
Maybe one.
Maybe.
But you're not, you know.
Maybe.
I don't know how anyone walks away from that saying she didn't know.
She had no
idea.
You
only need one.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Okay.
It's not majority rules on a case like this. It's unanimous.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Well, you know, God bless those jurors. 9 days, hours and hours and hours and hours.
Yeah.
And this isn't even close to being done, right?
I don't think it is. We haven't heard anything from the defense. Let's see what the defense comes up with. And listen, I have to say it's very impressive the way the prosecutor is methodically explaining the evidence. A lot of it is incredibly technical.
You see, know, the alibi very, very note? Technical. The alibi
yes,
notes?
I did.
Yeah.
Well,
unbelievable.
I think Schoenhorn has a good argument on this one in terms of how the police are referring to this, because it is a shorthand prejudicial way that the investigators referred to these notes. And Traconis says that she and Fotis were instructed to keep these detailed notes from his divorce attorney, who that's what they claim, that the divorce attorney wanted them keeping a journal of everything they did. The question will be, how far does that journal go back? Did they only find notes from that Friday, or did they find notes that went back 2 or 3 weeks? Or to me, that would be a relevant question.
Any of those notes in her handwriting?
Not that has been reported, no.
Okay.
No.
But we'll find out.
Well, you know, Ruth had the report for jury duty yesterday.
Yeah, how'd it go?
She got out.
Yep.
Did she get out because she's involved in your show?
No.
No.
They just didn't call her.
Oh.
Yeah, so it was like how many hours?
She doesn't have to show up for another 3 years. She's done.
It was like 8 to 11.
Yeah, they ghosted her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I sat in the jury pool the whole time. Never got called.
Was it fun? Did you like it?
I mean, I'm good for 3 years. I don't.
Okay.
I don't need to, you know, it was just a lot of sitting around, really.
Remember
it was
Sex and the City? Remember the Sex and the City episode with Sarah Jessica Parker, and she's in jury duty, and she sees a guy who brings a mango, and he brings all these strange fruits.
I'm sure every guy at a construction site now is saying, oh, that was my favorite episode.
That brought tear to my eye, boy. I remember that one. Remember that one, Bob?
Leave me alone. I love those episodes.
Yeah, I give those jurors credit. It's a lot of stuff to go through, and, you know,
yeah.
I don't know. At some point, I think we got to start reconfiguring the trials to be more focused on the attention span of us now, because we're on TikTok. We're just scroll, 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 scroll.
Yeah.
You know, 9 days of testimony, 6 hours of video.
It's a long time.
They're not even close to being done.
No.
Yeah, but Chaz, this is real life. I mean, this is not real life.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is not TikTok. This is real life.
But look what they did with OJ. They had that thing go on for over a year.
Yeah.
Like, that judge was out of control. Like, he just had no control over it. You've got to. A typical murder trial is what, like 6 weeks?
Yeah. That sounds about right.
Okay.
Yeah, not that long.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, you mean you're talking about OJ from 1994? That was insane.
That was nuts.
The judge with it. I think he was just playing to the cameras every day. It was insane.
Ito liked the fame.
Yeah. All right.
And how about the fact that the prosecutor lost? How about that she lost that trial?
They lost it when they moved it to L.A.
Yep.
From Brentwood. That's when they lost it.
You know, that case is a classic jury nullification case in law schools. Because that's a case where all the evidence, at least to the public, seemed overwhelming. But the jury said, no, we don't like this police force. We don't care what you say. We don't believe you.
Yeah. And, I mean, yeah, not to go over all that. But anyway, yeah, that was a long trial.
It was.
All right, Lisa, thank you for coming on. Lisa Wexler, 10 a.m. to noon every day on our sister station, WICC. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
All right. David Lee Roth, Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
Yes, he is.
All right, so he went off recently. Like, this, it's just the gift that won't stop giving. All right, so he posted a YouTube video yesterday roasting Wolfgang Van Halen about things that happened on the final Van Halen tour, even though the video is called This Crazy Kid.
Yeah.
Dave uses a different phrase throughout the rant.
This kid, he's complaining the entire tour like I'm not paying enough attention to him on stage. I'm giving him the best, everything I've got in front of 20, 30,000 people at a clip, and he's complaining.
Dave's not paying enough attention to me.
Cut to New York City, 20,000 of my closest friends. I walk out into the middle of the stage, and I'm going to do Ice Cream Man.
Hold on a second. He acts like the 20,000 people are there to see him, right? And not Wolfie's dad.
Right, you know, the guy next to you. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Or Alex.
With the
yeah,
name.
They're all here for me. These are my closest friends.
Right, not the guy the band's named after.
Right.
And what I don't know is this kid has commandeered a couple of monkeys to go in back behind my back and throw out these two great dames that I invited to be my guests to the show. And these dames are in their 40s, okay? Business women. In fact, you aren't going to believe this. What he doesn't know is that these two dames work for the accounting firm that represent him, not me. And he throws them out of the building. He's teaching me a lesson. What this kid doesn't know, they're carrying the paychecks for all 82 people on the road crew.
Oops.
You believe that?
No.
Right before they got thrown out, wouldn't they say, but we have to pay checks for the...
Right.
Yeah.
Show some idea of some sort. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a disconnect there.
I also don't believe that they carry paychecks.
Right.
Right.
We don't do that anymore.
Right.
You just don't.
Yeah. Here's part two.
We're playing the Hollywood Bowl, and Ed's not having a good day this year. I always got to play it like, what if this was the last show I ever have with the brothers? This is important to me. I walk out on stage at the Hollywood Bowl. This is the very last show that we're playing, and I start getting tears in my eyes. I'm about to launch into Ice Cream Man, and this kid, he commandeers two muscle monkeys, locates the one dame that is my guest. She's off in the wings of the Hollywood Bowl. They find her and throw her out of the building. Wolfie Van Halen's gonna teach me a lesson by throwing out what he thinks is my girlfriend. But guess what? Not only is this an accountant again, and not only is she carrying the paychecks for 82 of us on the road crew, but she's carrying cash bonuses for everybody there. Remember New York City? It's the same lady. And that's how I remember my last show with Eddie Van Halen.
He opened with he was having a bad day that year.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, that woman must have been a nightmare.
Yeah, really?
No kidding.
Yeah.
I don't care how much money you have. Yeah. Get out.
Get out. Everyone must have wanted that to happen.
Yeah. Yep.
And they must have been begging Wolfie, like, hey, come on.
Yep.
This lady.
Just let us do it.
Well, Sammy Hagar and Dave, when they toured, they had a wall built between them because the two camps just didn't get along. How do you think that went, you know, with Dave and Van Halen?
Not good.
No, not good. Well, Wolfie is never shy about responding to people on X.
Yeah,
not at all.
So I'm interested to see if he'll be making a video today. Why is January divorce month?
Start the year of new year, new me.
Yeah, my guess is that combined with, let me just get through the holidays. I don't want to bust up the kids' holidays.
Right, right, right.
Comedian Ben Kirsch is in studio, and we have divorce attorney Jacqueline Newman on the show now. Is it because families want to get through the holidays? Is that what it is?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, nobody really wants, you know, summons in their stocking. So as soon as that's done, everybody's ready to start their year.
Although that's a creative way to deliver it.
If you wrap it, it'd be kind of cool. Well, you see this.
Little bow.
Yeah, exactly.
How busy are you right now, being in January?
January is definitely the busy month. We have a lot of people. It's really kind of the month that people are deciding what they want to do. So we get a lot of people that come in and they're just like, I don't want to end the year the way I started it. Let me at least educate myself on where things are. But I find that usually actually people start really getting divorced in, like, I'd say March. February, they get through Valentine's Day. And after that, if the Valentine's Day doesn't work out or whatever it may be,
okay,
then I feel like people usually then come to me and they're like, all right, it's time to do it.
Kind of like buying a car. I'm going to start the process now in January.
Right.
Get past February 14th. And start the paperwork.
I'm just picturing for Valentine's Day, those little candy hearts saying, like, get out.
You're done.
Right, see ya.
What if you had to say, like, the top three reasons for a divorce?
I think there's a few different reasons. I mean, first of all, I think that people really have failed expectations in a marriage. I think you get married and you think it's going to be all like, you know, roses and romance and all that. And then, you know, you have a mortgage to pay and then you've got kids and all the things that happen in a marriage and happen in life. I think people just aren't ready for it. I think some people just romanticize.
Yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. And I think that there's just this romanticize of what marriage should be, and Facebook and everything else and all the social media makes everything look so wonderful. And then you look at that and you're like, well, that's not happening in my marriage. And I think that people just have very failed expectations, and then anger starts, and then et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's probably one of the biggest reasons people get divorced.
Do you feel like there's ranges of life in a marriage? Like, in other words, a lot of your customers are early in the marriage, and then after 10 years, after the kids move out? Like, is there... You know,
yeah, I mean,
spot.
I think there's different stages of it. There are. I mean, you get a bunch of people that, you know, not a ton, but I do get some people that, you know, quick marriages, you know, they just realize, whoops, made a mistake. And so you get that kind of like grouping. But then I would say the majority of people really are the exactly what you just said. When everybody goes to college and you look at your spouse, and you're like, wow, I haven't really spoken to you in the last 10 years. And now I'm realizing it's like you and me and that's it. And they realize that's not what they want.
The green card
came
in.
Yep.
Yeah. Have you ever, or, you know, you've been doing this for a long time. What are some of the top odd reasons people have given you for a divorce?
Odd reasons?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one. let's see. I mean, you know, you don't get a lot of people that really are like, oh, I don't like the way he crunches the cereal. But I think that, geez, I don't know. And now you're like putting me on the spot. I have to think about this. It's kind of early. Odd reasons. You know, more, I would say more so you get a lot of people that, you know, it's the money thing. Falling in love with other people, that's probably not also odd.
Right. Falling in love with other
people.
Yeah, they
weren't as rich as they said they were. Yep. Right. You're not a rocket scientist.
Yeah, usually,
yeah, you aren't an astronaut like I thought you were.
I mean, you get definitely, I mean, I've had a lot of people that have realized that, you know, they don't want to necessarily, you know, they realize that they're not, you know, heterosexual. We get a lot of those.
All right.
Like that. So that definitely happens. You know, every now and again, we'll get people that realize, you know, that they don't want to have kids and they thought they did. Because maybe, I don't know, you know, whatever happened, they hung out with somebody else's kids and they were like, I don't want to have any of my own. And then
that'll do it.
Like, I don't want to do that anymore.
The nephews. All right, we're good.
Yeah, I would say things like that, but it's usually pretty much the standard, you know, failed expectations, it's money issues, it's cheating, it's, you know, the stuff that you probably see more on TV.
Person changed, yeah.
Yeah, and have you had divorces that got so emotional that you felt like you were in danger or that there was somebody in danger?
In danger of...
just violence.
You know. Yeah.
Because it's a very...
actual and violence. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I had a case. I mean, this is a gazillion years ago. But yeah, I had a case where the husband actually came after me. I had to get escorted in and out of the courtrooms and stuff because he thought I was the reason they were getting divorced. I was like, no, it's really... I mean, unfortunately, this guy was very abusive with his wife. And so I was like, well, not really me. Like, I'm not the reason you guys are getting divorced.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I mean, we've definitely had that. And, you know, look, I mean, it is very unfortunate, but there are times that, you know, people are violent with each other. And so you definitely do see that. And, you know, we do our best to protect people against it as much as we can and separate them.
Yeah, it's a very emotional thing, especially if you don't want to get divorced or if you're losing all of your life.
Right, or half your stuff.
And this attorney just keeps, you know, chipping away at you.
Right.
Yeah.
They say family court is, like, really violent.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I don't practice as much in family court. In New York, there's family court and then there's Supreme Court, which is where the divorces are. But, yeah, family court is one of the reasons I don't practice because I have been doing this a long time and I don't need to practice there anymore. But it's a very unpleasant place to be, to say the least. It's kind of like the Wild West and the rules don't seem to apply, but it's hard. I mean, look, all of this is hard. Let's not pretend it's not. It's a really tough thing. It's a tough decision to make. But people, you know, and I think that, you know, when people first come to me, usually they're very, very angry, very, very hurt. But then when they start kind of seeing the process, you know, and time heals and they start seeing the legal bills, people's anger kind of dissipates a little bit when they realize that it's very expensive to be angry. And it's very expensive to have, you know, such the high moral ground of like, I'm going to do this on principle. You know, at some point you just kind of have to say, I need to move on with my life. And so we really kind of encourage people to speed that process along, because all you're really doing is hurting everybody in your path when you're so angry.
Attorney Jacqueline Newman's on. She's author of The New Rules of Divorce, 12 Secrets to Protecting Your Wealth, Health, and Happiness. So I'm guessing that's probably some advice that you give a lot when people want to go nuclear.
Yeah.
Just because they were cheated on or whatever.
Right.
You probably have to talk them off the ledge and say, you know what?
Breathe a moment.
It's a lot better to just get to your next life.
Yes. Breathe.
Than it is to live in court and fight this out.
Yep.
Just, why don't you just let that ashtray go?
Yeah.
100%. I mean, yeah. And because the court, I mean, this is one of the things, you know, when you talk about things that people don't expect, courts don't care about affairs. Like, they're really, you know, people come to me with all their evidence and they come to me, you know, lipstick on the collar type thing. And I'm like, you know, I know you've been collecting this and you think you have this aha moment, but the court's not really going to care, you know, unless the person's been, you know, introduced the person to the children or there's been significant money spent. We're not talking about dinners or hotels, like real money spent. You know, no one's going to care. And that's a really hard pill for people to swallow.
But you bought them a house.
Well, you've been burned.
Yeah. Well, that,
you know,
yeah.
You feel horrible about it. And you want some red, you want someone to say, you were wrong.
Right.
Right.
It's tough.
Yep.
Have you had people who were fighting over like ridiculous items that you're like, you know, we're at the end of this. A lot of times that's probably, they just don't want it to be over. They know once they stop fighting over this item, it's
done.
Over.
Yeah, yeah.
And they don't want it to be over.
100%.
What kind of items?
I had a guy once who, I mean, you know, we deal in the high net worth space. So I was in a situation, I mean, we're talking millions and millions and millions of dollars. Fight. We were fighting forever. Finally resolved everything except for this one grandfather clock that was probably worth like $200 or whatever it was. And the wife like wanted it. And the husband, for whatever reason, was fixated on it. And he's like, I'm not selling this case. Like, this is after we're talking like probably at least a year of negotiations. And he was just like, no, he's like, that's it. He's like, I will blow this entire thing up over this stupid grandfather clock. And what he really wanted to do, he ultimately got it. What he wanted to do, and I don't know if he did this or not, is he wanted to burn it, take a video of it and send it to her.
As a lasting momentum.
That's a guy who is probably wronged.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's scorned.
I really hated
that. Was there cheating? Do you remember?
There was, you know, she denied it the entire time. He was fixated that she did. So I don't really know what ended up really happening, but he was obsessed, you know, that. And he said it was an emotional affair if it wasn't physical, but he was convinced that she was in love with this guy.
Oh.
And she kept denying it. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, there was a lot of issues in the case. But, yeah. I don't know if he ended up doing it or not. I was like, you know what? Don't even tell me. I was like, I got you the clock. Like, let's just move on.
Yeah, I haven't seen go viral yet, so I have no idea.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, Higgle.
That's amazing. Millions and millions of dollars. I'll blow this whole thing up for that clock.
Over a clock.
Yeah. Stupid clock.
Attorney Jacqueline Newman's on. So you're part of the title of your book is 12 Secrets to Protecting Your Wealth, Health, and Happiness. What are, like, give us two.
All right. Well, one was that, I mean, I can give you more than two, but one was that whole idea that, you know, affairs don't shock you. I mean, because that's something that people just don't realize. The other thing we were talking about is, you know, a lot of people have this idea that, you know, when you hear about spousal support or alimony or maintenance or whatever, people think that, you know, they're going to be supported the rest of their lives. And they're going to be, you know, you hear a lot of people are like, I'll be supported and accustomed to the lifestyle I was living. Like, that's what you hear all the time. They come in, they're like, I want to be supported. And it just doesn't happen. And especially I can speak to New York, the formulas and the statutes for spousal support are really going down and you watch it, you know, and I think it will continue to go down as more women are in the workplace, as more men are taking larger roles in parenting, you know, there's just a shift. And so people that are, you know, that may sacrifice their career for their children or whatever it might be, come to me and they say, well, you know, yes, my spouse has been supporting me all this time. I want the spouse to continue supporting me. And when I have to tell them, like, sorry, that's not going to happen. And I know you've been out of the workforce for the last, like, 12 years. And all of a sudden there's this thing called, you know, the internet. And you have to learn all this new technology and everything else. It's devastating. And so I'm a big advocate of like people being really aware of that. And, you know, you have to realize like you're not going to get supported the way you think you are.
Oh, wow.
It's going to be a time limit, like 5 years. Let's say, get yourself together in 5 years. Done.
the formula is really, I mean, at least in New York, and I understand that that's even worse.
I'm just saying, should we have a time limit? Like,
you get divorced,
but you
it's like, I'll give you support for 5 years, but you have to have it together.
At that point, yeah, you should get your ass moving.
You got 5 years to pull your life together.
Exactly. Right.
Get on your own. It's time to be an adult.
Meter's running. Go. Hit the ground running.
That's not a bad idea.
No, it's not.
Is that how it works or not really?
Well, they do. I mean, it does sort of work like that. There is a formula to the degree of, like, it's a percentage of the length of the marriage. So, you know, but from, like, 0 to 15 years, it's up to 30% of the marriage, 15 to 30% of the marriage. So you think about that, that's not that long. So you've been out of the workforce for 15 years, and you can end up with not a lot of support. So, and not a long time frame of support, and not a lot. And so, at that point, you know, that's hard.
So you see your ex pushing carts.
Oh, that would be the, you drive in the Walmart. Right. Like, hey, so how's it going?
Oh, hey, look at
you. You look good, huh? In that blue vest.
It matches your eyes.
I have a couple of wealthy friends who are doing lifetime alimony.
Oh, see, you shouldn't have. There's,
you got to be able to get out of that.
Yeah, it's
going to
be like five
right?
years. That's it. Done.
I don't know what state they're in, and I don't know why they did
disbelief.
That. Oh, they're in Connecticut.
Connecticut.
Yeah, I mean, I can't speak to Connecticut laws, but I'm assuming, did they agree to that, or did a court order
I don't
that?
Know. I didn't ask, it's not my...
I'm guessing they agreed to it, because lifetime... There used to be. I mean, again, I don't know when they got divorced, but there used to be this lifetime alimony. Now, like, you're really only getting that if there's, like, a significant reason. There'd have to be something like, you know, someone is... you know, really incapable of working to the degree that there's some sort of physical or
they're allergic.
They're allergic to work.
I can't have an allergy to work.
Just they put an application in front of them. Yeah, they get all.
I got a doctor's note. It's in your handwriting.
I know a few people like that, so that might be a thing.
You said you were allergic.
Well, you're great. I hope you come back.
Yeah.
And we'll link up to the book. This sounds like a great book for anyone who's thinking about getting married.
Right.
Or thinking about getting unmarried.
It's a great stocking stuffer.
The New Rules of Divorce, 12 Secrets to Protecting Your Wealth, Health, and Happiness. What a funny Valentine's Day gift that is.
I got this for you. Little candy heart. Get out. Yeah.
Thank you, Jacqueline Newman. Appreciate it. Teenager got busted for duct taping dead fish to ATMs. A 17-year-old kid in Utah facing charges for taping dead fish to ATM machines. He's been going around to different ATMs and duct taping fish to the screens.
Oh, well, see, it's Utah. So what's there to do, really, Utah?
Okay.
When it's not ski season.
He was also uploading footage of it to his social media.
Oh, I wonder how he got caught then.
Yeah, well, he must have traced back the fish.
He has over 57,000 followers. I don't know what his handle is, or I would say, let's look it up.
Weird dude.
Oh, wait. On Instagram, and he goes by the name Fish Bandit.
Okay.
Hell yeah.
Apropos.
His tagline is, live, laugh, tape fish on ATMs.
Nice.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's the sickest
kind of pinpoints right there.
There's apparel. There's charters.
Of course.
There's a lot of enterprises.
Oh.
Well, I don't even have to make funny videos anymore. I can just start taping animals to ATMs.
Right. You're working too hard, man.
You know what? Seriously.
Hamsters are funny.
Yeah, there you go.
Does that annoy you when, like, you're making these great
content.
Comedic productions?
That's the whole internet now. That's all it is. It's just being shown every day. Oh, I could try way less harder if I really wanted to. Yeah.
Why am I using my brain?
Yeah.
Just tape something.
I just got to find a thing. Just
here.
One little thing.
Here,
all this work and I could have just taped fish to ATM screens.
Squeezable chicken toy taped to ATM. Done.
Yeah,
he does not talk in the videos, it seems like.
Probably can't.
Yeah, he wears a bandana on the pictures that he's in of himself.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Yeah, because no one can, like, you know, just trace back that stupid name to the ATMs.
Well, he said he's a bandit, right? That's in his username.
He's a bandit.
Right.
Of course.
Cops in Provo, Utah said he's duct taped at least 13 fish to 13 ATMs since last August. Man, if you don't get that fast, that's a bad smelling ATM.
Oh, yeah.
Especially summertime.
That'll ruin your
summertime
fingers.
In Utah.
Oh, one of those glass encased ATM boots.
Right.
Ah, well, those are bad enough as it is.
Utah's not known for fishing, are they? Just trace back any fish mark in the area.
Yeah.
Got him.
He also posted a video around the holidays of three fish duct taped to the side of a parked police cruiser.
See, that's stupid. Right?
The holiday time, special.
It should have been seven fishes. The feast of the seven fishes.
Yes.
He was really thinking this one out.
You should have, dummy.
It looks like he is not just targeted ATMs. He's also taped fish specifically to the door of a Bass Pro Shop.
Nice.
He's expanding.
Right. He's creatively thinking, using his brain.
Well, he's in the bathroom, so it's the bathroom stall door.
Well, if the fish is still alive when he does it, it looks like that Billy Bash.
Yeah.
Billy Bass.
Don't worry, be happy. Give me back the flavors.
Take me to the river.
What if it was you hanging out at the ATM?
I got to tell you, that's the dumbest thing, but when it came out, I thought it was the funniest thing.
Remember Phil hated it? We kept playing it over and over again.
I still can't stand
flavors.
It.
Give me that fish. Oh,
what
if
worst.
It was you hanging up on this wall? If it was you in the sandwich, it wouldn't be you at all.
How do you remember the words to that?
I don't know.
It gift. Annoyed me, that's why.
It's a gift. Yeah. Yeah, six
that was a McDonald's commercial, right? Filet
yeah.
of fish?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was
The campaign. Yeah, they had two
it
guys.
Was their jingle.
Yep. Remember, originally they were both sitting there, two guys were eating the filet of fish, and then the fish on the wall started singing. Give me back the filet of fish.
Give me that fish. Give me that filet of fish. Give me that fish.
Could sound like Pee Wee Herman a little bit.
A little bit. Yeah. Okay, I see that.
Yep.
What a crazy maneuver by McDonald's to have filet fish.
It worked. I love filet
people
fish.
People love it. People yeah. love it.
I love filet fish.
They're great. They're great.
I can't. I'm not a big fish guy.
I haven't had McDonald's in a long time, so if I was there, I would get a Big Mac or a quarter pounder. Right. I would go with filet fish. Mm. But man, they're just yummy.
Yep. I like their fried chicken sandwich.
There's got to be a restaurant that does high-end versions of all of the things that we love from fast food.
Yeah.
Right.
High-end Big Mac, high-end quarter pounder
McRib.
With cheese, high-end Whopper with cheese.
Yeah. How do you high-end
fillet
nuggets,
of fish.
Yeah. But it is what it is, though. I mean, that's part of the charm.
Yeah, probably better chicken. Yeah.
I don't think I want a high-end nugget. Just what? Give me what I know, what I like.
Some Wagyu beef.
Yeah. High-end nugget just sounds wrong. I get a high-end nugget. Well, go see a doctor pull it out.
This was the Jazz and AJ podcast. Thanks for getting through the whole damn thing. Subscribe now and please rate and review us. Unless you have terrible things to say, then please don't. Also, share this podcast with friends. Jazz and AJ in the Morning happens weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. out of New Haven, Connecticut on the mighty 99.1 PLR.